Today's daf is Mem Zayin. We're going to start on Mem Vav, toward the middle, a little toward the bottom. Read over for Shlemot, Varabatina, Ozavram Shiva, Menchana, Karmipa, Nima, Wali Penina, Baracha Frida, Chayamak Esther, Bat Zipporah, Daniel, Ben Mirim, Chayarut, Yosef, Ben Rachel, Bat Rivka, Rafal, Yoshua, Falek, Ben Brachabatia, Yenta, Mirim, Bat Chana, Rachel, Yael, Mirim, Bat Chaya. Okay, we were just finishing off this last Mishnah, the case with the Ilonit, and then we compared it to the previous Mishnah, and we said that there was a contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda and the previous Mishnah had said that the issue has to do with if it's a neder shiyad ubo rabim or lo yad ubo rabim, in which case the assumption was his concern, the reason why he did a tikkun olam in that case was it was a knas for women that they shouldn't be nedraniyot and make these public nedarim, and also prutzot. But we're talking specifically about the neder issue now. And in the Mishnah about the Ilonit, Rabbi Yehuda said that if you divorce someone because you assume, because and you say, I'm divorcing you because you can't have children, you're infertile, then we're not going to let you remarry her because we're worried that if it turns out she marries someone else, has children, and it turns out it wasn't her issue, then you might cancel the get, in which case she won't be divorced, in which case she'll end up being an Eish Adish and have mamzerim. So in that case, Rabbi Yehuda's dafka concerned for kilkul. And Chachamim, in the second case, say, yachzir, you're allowed to. We're not worried about the kilkul. And in the first Mishnah, they said, in general, lo yachzir, because, and the assumption was that it was because of the kilkul. So Rabbi Yehuda, on Rabbi Yehuda, we said, is not a contradiction, because he is choshesh le kilkul, but in the first Mishnah, he didn't think there was a concern for kilkul, because he held, number one, that everybody knows you can be Mayfair your wife's nedarim, and therefore we aren't worried that down the road he's going to all of a sudden find out, oh, had I known I could be Mayfair your neder, it would be okay. And also he held that, and that's like Rabbi Meir, and also he holds like Rabbi Elazar, who holds that Ein Adam Rotzesha Titbazei Ishto BeBeitin, a man wouldn't want his wife to have to go to a Beitin, and therefore if we're talking about nedarim that all of a sudden he finds out, oh, she could have been Mayfair Etzel Chacham, he would never be able to claim that because the assumption is a man would never want his wife to go to a Beit Din to get her Nidarim canceled. That's a big embarrassment. And therefore, he wouldn't want her to do that. And therefore, you wouldn't say that that would be an issue. So therefore, what do we conclude about Rabbi Yehuda? He is Choshesh L'Kilkul, but in the first Mishnah, there was no issue of Kilkul. And therefore, he came up with a different reason for the Tikkun Olam, which is that we don't want women to be Nadraniyot. So now, look about 5-6 lines before the Mishnah starts. Amar Rava, Rabbi Yehuda kashya, Rabbanan lo kashya. Yes, we have, so we resolved the issue of Rabbi Yehuda, but isn't Rabbanan also kashya? So, and you didn't resolve that. So Ella Amar Rava, Rabbi Yehuda lo kashya kedishanina. So Rava answers, okay, so the Rabbi Yehuda part we already dealt with. Rabbanan ad Rabbanan lo kashya, why? Because man chachamim, who's this day of chachamim? Rabbi Meir. Da'amar b'inan t'nai kaful. V'hacha b'mayas kinan b'delo kafle l'tna'e. In the case of the Ilonit, we're talking about where he just said, I'm divorcing you because you're an Ilonit. But he didn't say, but if it turns out you're not an Ilonit, then I don't want to be divorced to you. And according to Rabbi Meir, you'd have to say the chachamim in this Mishnah hold like Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, we've learned this before, that where do we learn Tanaim from? B'nei Gad and B'nei Reuven, right? With the, if you go into the land, right? If you go first, then you can inherit this land, and if not, then not. And there it was a Tanai Kaful. It says that if, yes, and if not. So therefore, Rabbi Meir holds that any Tanai, in order for a Tanai to work, it has to be a Tanai Kaful. You have to say, if this happens, then this will happen, and if it doesn't, then you have to express the ramifications. It's like Michlala Vatashomehen. Right? Can you assume that since you said one, that the opposite would be true or not? So therefore, the assumption is that the second mission is talking about a case that you're allowed to be Machzir Gurshato because you didn't say, in the event that you're not an Elonit, you won't be divorced from me. But had he said that, then it would actually work. As it would be good, and then we'd be concerned that he would cancel it, and then Lo Yachzir. Okay, new Mishnah. Now we're moving on to something totally different. Hamocher etatzmo. It's totally different from this. It's not totally different from our Tikkun Olam. And as we're continuing along the Tikkun Olam theme, and we're also dealing now with Pidyon Shvuyim again, but a bit of a different perspective, a different aspect of it.
המוכר את עצמו ואת בניו לעובדי כוכבים, אין פודין אותו. אבל פודין את הבנים לאחר מיתת אביהם.
If somebody, let's say you don't have money, so you sell yourself to be a slave. So if he sells himself to be a slave and his children to a non-Jew, which obviously is not a good situation to be in, you can't redeem him. But you can redeem his children once the father dies. Okay, we're going to see in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, exactly what the issue is. Amar Rav Asi, Rav Asi immediately says, this isn't in any case. In other words, in general, you really can redeem somebody if he sold himself to slavery to an Ovei Kochavim. But what's the situation? V'hu shemachar v'shina v'shilesh. This is talking about someone who continually does this. In other words, there seems to be a theme here. That what's he doing? He doesn't have enough money, so what's his tactic? Well, I'll sell myself into slavery and other people will redeem me. So he continually does this and other people keep having to spend the money to get him out. So if he does it a few times already, okay, Shina is twice, Shilesh is three times. If he does it twice or three times, then already we start to see a pattern, and that kind of guy you cannot redeem. But now, why can you redeem his children?
So their fault.
So first of all, it's not their fault. And the assumption also is that we're not, one of the Mefarshim say, I think it's Rashi, one second. Forget who says it. But that if he's there with his children, so he can make sure that they keep their Judaism within the Ovei Kochavim's house. But once he dies and the children are there on their own, there's nobody to be watching out, making sure they're keeping their religion. So therefore, then there's a mitzvah to redeem them. This is very much like the slave, right? The Ovei Kochavim, the Eved Kenani, what was our concern? That he wasn't going to be able to keep mitzvot. So here also, that's our concern. That's why we have an obligation to free him. So when it's the guy himself, we can assume he figures out some sort of, he figures it out. But when we leave his children by themselves, well, they're not going to be able to figure it out on their own. So therefore, we're going to say that we have to redeem them. Hanhu b'nei b'michse. Okay, this is the people of a place. Okay, now what did Rav Asi say? If you see a pattern in someone's behavior that they've done this a few times, then already you can't redeem them. Now we're going to see that there's a bit of an extension to this idea. The people from this town of Bnei Michse, the Yasfei Zuzei Meovdei Kochavim, they borrowed money from Ovdei Kochavim, v'lo havu lehu lemafreinu, and they didn't have money to pay back. Atu v'kagarbu lehu, so they took them as slaves. Atu v'kamejo Rav Huna, so they came before Rav Huna, and they want to be redeemed. Amar lehu, Rav Huna says to them, Mai yavi lehu, what can I do for you? Ditznan, this is a first Mishnah, it says, Hamocheret atzmo ve'at banav lovdei kochavim ein podinoto. Right? If you sell yourself and your children, well, sorry, tough luck. We can't redeem you. Amar lei, Rabbi Abba says to him, Limaditanu rabenu, v'hu shemachar v'shina v'shilesh. Didn't you teach us that it's only in the case if there's a pattern, right? He's done this a few times. And these people haven't done it a few times. Amar lei, Hane miragel regile da'avde hachi. These people, now here they're going to say it's not these individual people, but what is it? It's the people of this town. This is something that's generally done in this town. And therefore, because you live in a town where everybody's suspect of doing this, so you automatically become suspect of doing this on purpose, and therefore we can't redeem you even though you personally didn't do it. So here it's almost like a Kol Yisrael Erevin Zeh Bazeh, right? If you're part of a community, right, maybe you say, Tov L'Shachein, Oy L'Rasha, Oy L'Shcheino, right? And if you have a bad neighbor, it reflects poorly on you also. So here, the people in the neighborhood are affecting this person, these people who got taken into captivity. Hahu Gavra, Dezabin Nafshe L'Ludai. Okay, Ludai seem to be cannibals or something, people who kill other human beings. The current translates it as gladiators, which, right, luda, gladiators, right, it sounds like, so they say it's, you sold yourself to gladiators. Ata l'kameja Rabbi Ami. Amar lei, pirkan. He goes to Rabbi Ami and he says, please help redeem me, okay? I sold myself to the gladiators, but I need to get out of here, right? It's dangerous, obviously. They could kill him. Some people say that it's that they do human sacrifice, possibly. It's unclear exactly what this is, although the gladiator interpretation, certainly in the historical context, and the word itself sounds like gladiators, has the same letters. It seems like that's probably a good explanation. So Amar Leh, Tnan, Hamocher Atzmo Ve'et Banav, Lovdei Kochavim, Ein Podin Oto, Aval Podim Et Habanim Mishum Kilkula, V'Kol Sheken Hacha De'ika Katla. Okay, so now what does he say? So, oh, here's where Rashi says it. I knew Rashi had said it. So Rashi says, and what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says here, we see, and the answer back to him was, we see that Hamocher Atzmo Ve'et Banav Lovdei Kochavim, you can't be podeh oto, but you can be podeh the children. Why? Because of kilkula. And what does Rashi explain? What's kilkula? That they won't learn from the ways of the Ovdei Kochavim. As long as the father's alive, he can make sure that they're not going to learn from the Ovdei Kochavim. He'll keep the Masoret strong. But once the father's dead, there is no such thing. So if we can save children because of the kilkula, of the religious, you know, kilkul that will happen. So kol shekein hachadi kakatla, in this case, the guy's going to actually get killed. And therefore, all the more so. Now, this obviously doesn't relate to the aspect of what, I forgot who mentioned this, but that there's a difference between the person who sells himself and his children who kind of didn't do anything wrong. Right? In other words, if we look at it as you shouldn't sell yourself, in this case, the guy sold himself to the gladiators, but he didn't know the gladiators were going to kill him. Right? He's a little bit more to blame than the children. However, the Gemara here is making a comparison, you know, without keep looking at that aspect. So, Amru le Rabbana le Rabbi Ami, so now the story continues. In other words, what happens? He goes in front of Rabbi Ami and he says, please redeem me. So he says to him, so who says to who now? Amru le Amar. Right, it should be Amar Le, it should be Amar, it's Nan, right? He said, right, you should hear they're going to kill me. So Amar Le Rabbana Le Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Ami basically says, okay, fine, we should redeem you based on the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah, right, if you take the Mishnah, if you can save the kids, then obviously you can save someone from being killed. Amar Le Rabbana Le Rabbi Ami, Ha Yisrael Mumarhu, Dekachazi Le Dekachal Nebelo De Trefot. They said, wait a minute. You shouldn't save this guy. Now, this is a very difficult passage to swallow. You shouldn't save this guy because he's not religious. He's eating nevelo utrefot. He's a Yisrael mumar. He's not even right. How was the Yisrael mumar perceived? Okay, he was perceived as someone who left the religion, basically. Okay, he clearly doesn't believe in the religion anymore. Now, again, in the context of early Christianity going on at this time, you can imagine that Yisrael Mumar was perceived as probably going in the path of the Christians. So, you know, as opposed to looking at it in our world and saying, oh, he's a non-religious Jew, right? It's right, a datzlash, right? You wouldn't want to say, oh, the guy's a datzlash, we're not going to save him. Okay, but I think that it has to be understood in the historical context of the Yisrael Mumar were often heading in the heretical direction, you know, and perceived as early Christians, possibly.
Actually,
yes?
I was going to say that the early Christians were a pain in the neck for the Romans because they were basically making trouble because the Romans just didn't want to deal with it. So for a Jew to consider risking himself for somebody who was going in that path, it wasn't just dealing with somebody who was rejecting Judaism, but potentially putting himself in physical danger.
You're saying for the Jew to go to save the non-Jew, it was putting themselves in danger because the Romans were going to...
And to us it sounds horrible, but I don't think it's as horrible as it sounded because it was a physical...
Right, because it was a risk of putting themselves at risk to try to save someone else.
But also the community, because if he was representing the community, I will say this person, then he was bringing pain on the community.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If he was an early Christian, he was considered Jewish, even though he didn't consider it so.
Right. Right. Well, that's also, it's very interesting in terms of the whole, you know, halachically, just because someone leaves the religion, we still consider them Jewish. However, this whole, once you call them a mumar, well, then that takes them somewhat out of the mumar is always in a mixed position, right? How to view him exactly. It's a debate in lots of places. How to view this Yisrael mumar. So now they say, look, he was eating a velon and trefot. So Amar Lehu, you see Rabbi Ami really wanted to be Milamed Zchud on this guy. So what does he say?
Ema, maybe, right? Let's say, l'te'avonu de'ka'achil. There's a difference between doing it on purpose, lahachis, they call it, okay? Or because it was hard to find kosher meat. Maybe he was just, he didn't have any meat, so the meat he found was non-kosher meat, so he ate it. Not because he specifically wanted to leave the religion. And this is also how people view datzlashim often, or, you know, if you want to look halachically at it, are they going against it because they don't believe in Judaism, or are they going against it because it's just easier not to be religious? Right? In other words, what's the perspective on it? So here, he's saying, maybe he was eating at Latavon, and therefore, I'm going to go redeem this guy. Amrule, they said to him, V'ha zimnin di'ika hetera v'yisura kamei, v'shavik hetera v'achal yisura. If you notice, this is a bit of a play on words on what we learned earlier. Lo shavik inish hetera v'achal yisura. There's an assumption that no one's going to leave the heter and actually eat the isur if they haven't. Easy way to do the heter, they're going to choose the heter way. And this guy did the opposite, right? What did he do? He had a piece of, two pieces of meat in front of him, one kosher, one non-kosher, and he chose the non-kosher. And that proves that he clearly is a Yisrael Mumar. Okay? He does it lahachis. Okay? To particularly leave the religion. So now, they say, you know, you can't, now, there's a whole machlok, this very interesting machloket. What does it mean, zimnin? Zimnin could mean a few different things. Zimnin could mean it happened once, or zimnin could mean it happened many times. Okay? So there's a machloket mafreshim about how to understand this, and it has huge ramifications. If someone did this on a one-off, do we say that proves he's a mumar lahachis, that he's a ochel nevelo detreva lahachis? Or maybe a one-off doesn't prove anything, and it has to be that he continually does it. So there's a machloket among the mafreshim, whether we view it, you know, whether you're considered Yisrael Mumar, if one time it happened, or does it have to be a continual thing, and only that way we can prove you're Yisrael Mumar. So it's also a very interesting machloket. So now they say, right, however you explain it, clearly they agree that he's Yisrael Mumar. So Amarle, Zil lo kashav kali de'afrikincha. So now he goes back to the guy, you can hear the pain in his voice. He says, go, there's nothing I can do for you. They won't let me. Lo shav kele means they won't let me redeem you. It's very interesting, right? It's almost like it's troubling, and you see his personal struggle, Rabbi Ami. He really wanted to save him, but he couldn't halachically justify it, and therefore, you know, he wouldn't go against what everyone else was telling him.
So you would think that saving the life of a Jew trumps everything.
Right. So the point is that they don't view him as a Jew. That's the whole idea. They don't view this guy as a Jew. Because he's a Yisrael Mumar.
If you convert, you're still a Jew.
But that's what I'm saying. In other words, I think that you have to view this in the context of early Christianity. And maybe what Ani's pointing out is also with the Roman threat, that it was also sacrificing other lives potentially for someone who, you know, has left the fold. So anyway, very, right. It's troubling. It's definitely troubling. But, you know, interesting. Okay, Rish Lakish, Zavin Nafshe Leludai. Okay, who remembers Rish Lakish's history? Rish Lakish was a robber in the beginning of his life. He was a, you know, almost like a pirate kind of guy. And in this, you know, very interesting gripping story with Rabbi Yochanan, he, you know, sees Rabbi Yochanan, he's so beautiful, he jumps in the water after him. Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, turns out he thought he was a woman. He says, oh, you know, says, your beauty should be for women, and Rabbi Yochanan says back to him, your strength should be for Torah, and he ends up being Chozer B'Tshuva, right, the opposite of the last guy we just saw. He ends up being a Chozer B'Tshuva and becomes Rish Lakish. He was always Rish Lakish, becomes the famous, the one that we know. This story seems to have happened before he became religious. Okay, Rish Lakish, Zavin Nafshi L'Ludai, he sold himself to the gladiators. Shaka Bahadechiata Vigilgalta. He took a rock and he took like a bag and he rolled up inside a rock inside the bag. Okay? Amar Gemire, he said, I know, Di Yoma Batra, on the last day before they kill you, what do they do? Kol Dibai Minayu Avdele, Kihechi Delechaladame. They want a little kapara. They know what they're doing is not so great, that they're going to kill you. So what do? In order to get kapara for the fact that they're going to kill you, they give you your last wishes. They say, what are your last wishes? And they give it to you, whatever it is you ask. So what does he do? So he has this bag with the rock inside that he's saving for the day that they're going to kill him and for his last wishes. Yom Abatru, on the last day before they were going to kill him, Amrule, they said to him, Maini Chalach, what would you like? What can we do for you? What are your last wishes? Amar Lehu, Bi'ina Akamtinchu Vautvinchu, I want to tie you up and sit you down. V'chocha Binaichu Amche Chiyata Upalga. I want to hit each of you 1.5 times. Kamtinu Vautvinu. So they allowed this. Okay, why they allowed this is beyond our understanding. Anyway, he ties them up and sits them down. Kochab Minayu, each one of them, Kadmachye Chad Chiyata Nefig Nishmate. Okay, so when he hit the first hit on this guy, okay, the first hit, he died immediately. Harkinu Lishine. Now, what happened? Rish Lakish didn't want them to realize that they killed this guy, because if they realized, they would, their hands were tied. I don't know exactly what they would do, but they would figure something out. So what did he do? He grinded his teeth in anger. Amar le, achuche kamiyachechet, he looked at the guy who he killed, who obviously was making some grimace because he was dying, and he said, what, are you mocking me? Okay? And then, because he wanted to look like he was talking to him and the guy was still alive. Akate pashlach gabe palga dechayata. I still have another half a blow. Why are you laughing at me? Katlinhu kulhu. So he ends up eventually killing all of them. Nafik va'ata. Okay? And then he runs off. Okay? So basically he escaped these guys by outsmarting them. Okay. What the idea here is exactly... Right. One thing that clearly comes to mind here is the lack of intelligence of these people. Why they're bringing this here, I didn't really come up with any great explanation.
He didn't need to be redeemed. He took care of it himself.
Right. He didn't need to be redeemed. He took care of it himself. Okay, that's one, right? He actually did it on his own.
It's the same people.
It's these Luda'im. Right, it could be it's just bringing a story about the Luda'im. The question is, what's the point of the story? And then what's the Gemara trying to get across here? You know, is that, first of all, it's, I think maybe what Ruth is saying is that it's this concept of, until now we keep talking about, you know, should you save others? But maybe part of it is you should figure out a way to save yourself. And even all these stories we saw, they came to, these people who were captives came before the rabbis. How they exactly came before the rabbis if they were captive? Or I guess this guy was the first guy in the story we saw before was sold himself to be a slave. It's not like he was captive and he couldn't leave. But, you know, they went to the rabbis to try to come up with solutions for themselves. They didn't just wait for things to happen to them. And maybe that's part of the idea here, that you have to take initiative and be forthcoming about things. Now,
critical of Rabbani that we should have thought more creatively?
That Rabbi Yami should have come up with some sort of solution about how to save him, right? If Rish Lakish came up with this creative solution, you know, he should have come up with another creative solution. Interesting. Right, that maybe the story is critiquing Rabbi Yami, that he wasn't broad shoulders enough to say, this is what I think we should do, and we should have saved him. It's possible. And it's interesting that Rish Lakish is also not exactly a religious guy at this point.
Right.
Now, he wasn't an early Christian, but, you know, but he wasn't religious. Could be. So now we're going to hear something about Rish Lakish, also seemingly unrelated. Basically, Rish Lakish lived his life. He would make his money. He would buy his food for that day and spend all his savings. You know, he didn't have savings, basically. He would just eat and eat everything, and he would have nothing left. Amale barte lo bayit midi lemizgale. You don't want to save anything up at all? You know, for the future? Amar la biti krese kare. My stomach is storing it all up. Kinach nafshe shavik kama demorika. When he died, what did he have left? He had a kav of, saffron. Okay? He had a certain, you know, a very small amount of saffron.
Saffron is the most expensive spice herb out there. I mean, so it may not be random that it's saffron.
Okay, may not be.
No, it's the most valuable commodity.
Right. The question is how expensive it was in those days. Also, I don't know.
Here they seem to say it's negligible.
Right. They do seem to say it's negligible. Even if it's expensive, though, it's only one kav. It's not that much. Okay, but that was all he had to his name. That was all he left. So now what does it say? Kra nafshe vazvu la'acherim chelam. He said about himself, interesting, right? This was maybe on his deathbed, right? Because it already said he died, okay? But maybe on his deathbed he said, this is the pasuk in Mishlei that says, it's in Tehillim. It says, Ki yir'ech hachamim yamutu, yachag ksil v'var yovedu. Okay, what's the death of a ksil, someone who's stupid? What happens? Vazvu l'acherim chelam. They save up all their money all their lives, but in the end, they just, other people use it. In other words, it's a waste to save your money because in the end, you're not going to benefit from it. And here he was frustrated. Let me first explain, what was his frustration? That he wasted his time making money to be able to buy this, which in the end he just left, as opposed to learning Torah in that time. In other words, he should have been learning Torah and not working to make the money that gave him the money to provide him for with that saffron. So, you know, it's interesting also because this goes against what you would think about leaving money to your children, right? We all think that there's a value to leaving money to your children, to having money saved up. You know, his attitude was, I'd rather spend my time learning Torah and not, and it could be also he had this feeling because he spent half his life or however much of his life not learning and he was trying to always catch up on lost time and felt very strongly that it was just a waste of time to make money to have for other things that aren't necessary.
The whole economic philosophy that's caught on now. It's a book called Die Poor.
Uh-huh.
The whole idea is that what do you live working your whole life? So you maybe should spend your money and live.
Right. So what Cherry's saying is the whole modern concept of, you know, die poor and don't spend your life saving all your money. Right. So you can see there's, and this goes back to the whole theory that we've talked about many times, that the Gemara saw themselves as, you know, also giving financial advice and also, right, not just giving halacha. Okay, moving on to a totally different topic. Hamocheret sadeu le'oved kochavim. If you sell your field to an oved kochavim, lokeach umevim imenu bikurim. You still have to bring, okay, why lokeach ve umevi? Because the pasuk says with the bikurim you're supposed to take it and bring it to the Beit HaMikdash. We're going to see this taking and bringing further down, further ahead. So you're supposed to still take bikurim on this land, mipnei tikkun ha'olam. Okay, so if you sell land in Eretz Israel to a non-Jew, you have to still take bikurim on this land. Okay, now why did they do this, mipnei tikkun ha'olam? Because they don't want you selling your property to non-Jews. So what do they say? If you sell your property to non-Jews, know that you're going to have to buy back the bikurim from that land. That's a headache, right? The non-Jew knows you're going to need it. He's going to charge you a very high price to get the bikurim, and you're not going to, therefore, sell your land to non-Jews. Okay, and this is the whole thing trying to get you not to sell land to non-Jews. Now we're going to see two different approaches, and what the Gemara is going to go on to do is try to prove each opinion here. We're going to have a whole slew of proofs and then rejection of proofs for each opinion.
Sorry, so the Havamina is that you can sell them.
Yes, right. So, well, no, the Havamina is if you, not that you can, you're not allowed to, but if you sell, the sale is valid. This is one thing you're not allowed to, but if you do, the sale is valid, and it's mafkia the kedushat haaretz of the maaser, right? There's only chiyuv trumot maasrot on land that you own. Right, so presumably all the matanot. Okay. Yeah.
Michelle, does this affect, I don't want to get us off topic, but Shemitah and the idea of selling the land to non-Jews to be able to...
Hetcha Mechira?
Yeah, or that's was completely separate.
Right.
You don't actually sell...
Right, you're not actually selling land. Well, we're going to see here, there's going to be two approaches to when you sell land to non-Jews. Are you actually selling them the land itself, or are you selling them just the proceeds? I don't know how the Hetcher Mechira, on what principle it works. I don't know enough about it. Amar Rabba. Af al pi she'ein kinyan lo'ovei kochavim be'eretz Yisrael lafkia midei ma'aser. Even though there's no such thing as selling your land to basically to uproot the chiyuv of ma'aser, how do we know this? She'ne'emar ki li ha'aretz. What does it mean, ki li ha'aretz? Li k'dushat ha'aretz. The k'dusha of the land is there whether you sell it or whether you don't sell it. Aval Yesh kinyan lo'ovei kochavim be'eretz Yisrael lachpor ba borot shichin u'ma'arot sh'ne'emar ha'shamayim shamayim la'ashem va'aretz natan livnei adam. Okay, so what does this mean? This means if a non-Jew buys land from you, that you, he can use it to, you know, the kedushat ha'aretz is still there, but he can do whatever he wants to the land, right? It's like when you rent a house. there's certain contracts where they say, oh, if you want to do shiputzim, no problem. And other contracts that say, no, you can't change the house. You can use it. You can put your furniture in. But you can't start knocking down walls. So what this is saying is if a non-Jew buys your land, there's still a base kedushat ha'aretz on it. You still have some sort of ownership on it. But they can change things if they want. They can dig well, you know, well, they can do whatever they want to this property. Okay? The other opinion is going to say exactly the opposite. How do we know that they can do that? Shenemar, shamayim, shamayim, lashem, va'aretz nasan livnei adam. The land is for the people. Okay? The, God owns the heavens, but the land is for the people, and therefore they can do with it what they want. For Rabbi Elazar Amar, remember Rabbi Elazar the Emora here. We're having a machloket Emoraim. He's from Eretz Yisrael, arguing with Rabba. Ach al pi sheyesh kinyan lovei kochavim be'eretz Yisrael afkia midei maaser. Even though you can have a kinyan to uproot maaser, meaning if you sell your land to a non-Jew, there's no chiyuv maasrot. Shneemar digancha, right? It says maaser digancha your dagan velo dagan ovei kochavim, right? Not the one that belongs to the non-Jew. Aval. Ein kinyan lovei kochavim be'eretz Yisrael lachpor ba'barot shichinu ma'arot shenemar la'Hashem ha'aretz. Okay, here it's the opposite pasuk, right? There was Hashemayim Shemayim la'Hashem ba'aretz atalim yadam. Here there's a pasuk that says la'Hashem ha'aretz, meaning the land belongs to God and He can't start doing it with it what He wants. Okay, however, when it comes to the chiyuv ma'asrot, it says digancha. Digancha means only things that belong to you and not things that belong to a non-Jew. What's the machloka between them? Mar sevar digancha velo digano ve kochavim. Right? Rabbi holds that it's digancha. Rabbi Elazar holds it's digancha and not digano ve kochavim, and therefore you're patur from masrot. Umar sevar digunecha velo digano ve kochavim. What does this mean? Digunecha, what is digun? Digun is when you put the stuff into a pile. So what does he mean? What does it mean for the stuff of the Ovei Kochavim, the field of the Ovei Kochavim, to be chayav in masrot? What does that mean? The Ovei Kochavim is not taking truma to masrot. So what does it mean? It means that if you buy peirot from a non-Jew, do you have to take truma to masrot on it? That's what it means. If I buy, right, it's the non-Jew's field, I buy his fruits, are they chayav in truma to masrot or not? So if you hold that it's the kinyan is not mafkia from truma to masrot, then if I buy it from him, then I'm chayav in truma to masrot. So now, how do you know that I'm chayav in truma to masrot? Because it says, from digancha, they say digunecha. It means if you made the pile, right, you bought the fruits and then put them together in a pile, it's the making of the pile that's the chiyuv masrot. That's when the chiyuv masrot kicks in. So if you made the pile, even though the field was his, you still are chayav in truma to masrot. So therefore, what do we see? That if you bought it from a non-Jew, just because it's his land doesn't mean that there's no truma to masrot on it.
So if we buy fruits and vegetables from Arabs.
Right, so it depends what we hold. Right? That's exactly the debate here. Okay. I'm a rabbi. B'na amin Allah. So rabbi says, what's my proof? Even though they kind of have proofs, he's going to say, where do I learn this from? Ditna. Halekev ashikha v'apeh shalovei kochavim chayavim b'maaser. Elaim ken hivkir. The leket shechav and ovei kochavim, and we're going to explain exactly what this means in a minute, are chayav and maaser unless he specifically said this is hefker. Now, hey chidami, what's the case? Ilema di Yisrael. If we're talking about that the leket shechav and peh were from a Jew, okay? It was a Jew's field, he left over. Right, remember, leket is you leave over, right? When you're collecting, you left some behind. It fell. Sorry, while you were picking, some stuff fell. You leave that, right? So you have to leave it. Shicha is things you forgot when you were carrying the piles. You forgot them behind. And peah is the corner of your field that you leave. So if it's leket shicha and peah of a Jew, v'liktinu oved kochavim, and a non-Jewish person came by and collected what you left over, elen kenif kir. What does it mean? Elen kenif kir. Ha mifkarei v'kaimim. There's a concept in Judaism, in halacha, that if you leave over leket shecha and peah, and the poor person picks it up, it's not chayav in maaser. Why? Because anything that's hefker is not chayav in maaser. So in this case, you wouldn't have to say elen ken ifkir because it's already hefker. From the time the Jew left it behind, it was already hefker. So therefore, you wouldn't have to say elen ken ifkir. It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, it must be El Alav, it must be that it's De Ovei Kochavim. It's a Leket Shechan Pei of a field of a non-Jew. Okay, this is in a case where a non-Jew decided he's also going to leave over stuff for the poor person. Viliktina, right, after all those negative stories about Ovei Kochavim, here we have a positive one, right, that there are non-Jews who have concepts of giving to others. Viliktinhu Yisrael, and the Jew collected it, and then you'd have to say Tama Dehifkir. Then it's only because he made it Hefkir that is Patra from Truma Namasra. But Palo Hifkir, but what does it seem to imply, this source, this Mishnah? That if you weren't Mafkir, what would the situation be? You'd be Chayav. Ah, what does that prove? That a Sadev of Ekochavim is not Patur from Truma Namasra. Okay? That's his proof. So now what's the rejection of this proof? Lo. Lo Olam Yisrael. Let's go back to interpretation number one. We can explain that it was really from a field of a Jew. V'liktinu ovei kochavim. U'dekamarta. Remember what our problem was. Ha'mifkarei v'kaimei. Wasn't it already mufkar from the beginning? So what do they say? Nehi demafkarei adata di Yisrael. Adata dovde ovei kochavim mi mifkarei. What does it mean it's hefker? It's hefker because you're leaving it for poor Jews. But it's not hefker if a non-Jew collects it. If a non-Jew collects it, the concept here is that when you're mafkir, you're like a chacham peh, you're mafkir al dat, right? You're saying this is going to not belong to anyone because the assumption is going to end up in a Jew's hands. If a non-Jew collects it, then it goes back to being owned by you because you weren't mafkir al dat that a non-Jew would collect it. Okay, so you have to say that the hefker is like a conditional hefker on who collects it. And that's their explanation. Again, we have to remember, this is all just to answer up. You can't use this as a proof because maybe it can be understood differently. It's not necessarily the only explanation, but you could explain it maybe that your hefker was only for a Jew. Therefore, if a non-Jew is the one who collects it, it leaves the realm of hefker. It goes back to being owned by you. And therefore, only if you're mafkir, only if there's hefker done, then it's Patra from Truma Namasra.
You put yourself in quite a position, though, don't you? Meaning that you're chayav in some of it, you're not aware that you're chayav in, if you don't mafkir l'chatchila.
Say that again?
If you said, unless you specifically say it's mafkir, potential is that a non-Jew will collect it and you'll be chayav in maser and truma.
Right, so then the question is exactly who is chayav here? In other words, who...
Can you presume that they're chayav in this?
Right, if you say... If a Jew takes it from, right, that's what I think. I think it's the later person who takes it from the goy would have to be mafkir it in order for it to be patur from Truma Namasra. Right, I don't think it's the original owner. I think it leaves the realm of hefker as soon as he accepts it. I think that's how to understand it. Okay, Tashma. Now we're going to have a source that's going to prove Rabbi Elazar's opinion. Okay, remember what Rabbi Elazar says, right? What does Rabbi Elazar say? Even though there's kinyan lafkia midei maser, right? There is kinyan lafkia midei maser. Okay, that's the issue. Yisrael shalakach sadeh miyavei kochavim. Ad shelo hevi ashlish, v'chazar u'mechara lo, m'shevi ashlish, chayevet b'maser, shekvar nitchayva. Yisrael buys a field from an ovei kochavim before it grew a third of the way. Then, after it grows a third, by the way, we've seen this in Shabbat, like with the Machab and Drosai, that there's issued something cooking a third of the way here. It's ripening, you know, growing a third of the way. If he sells it once, Hiviyashlish, Chayevet b'maser, why? Shekvar nitchayva. Because while it was in the Jew's hand, it turned that corner between before a third to after a third, and therefore nitchayva. What does it show? Nitchayva in, lo nitchayva lo. Right, what do you see, though? If it didn't grow to the shlish in the Jew's hands, then it wouldn't be chayv and maser. And that proves Rabbi Elazar, who says that there is a kinyan for ovei kochavim, lafkia from masrot. So then they say, no, you can't prove anything from the source, because hacha b'mayaskinam b'suria. You could say that this source was talking about Suria. What's unique about Suria? We've seen this before. Suria was captured by David HaMelech as part of Israel. And therefore, Mida Rabbanan, what do we hold? Mida Oraita, there's no Truma Namasra, there's no Kedushat Ha'aretz. But Mida Rabbanan, there is. So now we're going to say here, the reason is, right, Lo Nitchayva, you wouldn't be Chayv in Truma Namasra, because there's no Truma Namasra, Mida Oraita in this case. Okay? V'kasav are Kibush Yachid Lo Shmei Kibush. The Kibush of David HaMelech is not considered Kibush. Okay? And therefore, this doesn't prove anything. Second source, we're going to try to prove Rabbi Elazar. Tashma. Yisrael v'ovei kochavim shalachu sadeh b'shutfut. Okay, they have a field that they jointly own. Teva v'chulim muravim zeba zed divrei Rebbe. Rebbe holds that this field is full of everything in this field is partial teva, partial chulim. It's all a big mixture. Okay? Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer shelovei kochavim patur v'shel Yisrael chayav. Okay, what do you say? That the part that belongs to the, right, we split it 50-50. Half of it is patur and half of it is chayav. Okay, so now what do they say? Akan lo pligi. Ella demar savar yesh brera, umar savar ein brera. So now what do they say? What's the machloka between them? Do we say this brera? Remember, how would brera work? Brera would work and say, well, now that I say I'm taking this fruit, that means that this fruit is 100% mine, and the other 50% of the fruit is 100% yours. In which case, we could say, there's no tevel and chulin mixed up here. My stuff is tevel, and the non-Jew stuff is chulin. But the guy who says, ain't brera, Rebbe, he'll say, you can't do brera here. So therefore, when I take my stuff, I can't say, well, retroactively, that means that none of that ever belonged to me. No, everything belongs to everyone. We just kind of split it up. But everything has tevel and chulin mixed up. So now, aval de kule alma, but everybody would agree, in other words, if the machloket's only brera, yesh brera, ain't brera, what do you see here? Everybody agrees that yesh kinyan lo ve'kochavim be'eretz Yisrael lafkir midei maaser, because everyone agrees that the non-Jews part is chulin, is not tevel, right? There is no chiyuv maaser on the non-Jews part. It's just a matter of, can we split the Jews and the non-Jews? But do we say brera or not? But everyone agrees that his, that 50% of this doesn't have chiyuv maaser on it. So therefore, we've proven, Rabbi Elazar here, that we're talking about, right, that the yesh kinyan lo ve'kochavim lafkir midei maaser. So again, how are they going to reject this? They're going to say, oh, hachanami, you could say that this source is besuria, v'kasaver kibush yachid lo shmei kibush. Okay, that's what you'd have to say. So again, we rejected this proof. Okay, now we're going to bring another proof for him. Amar Rav Chiya bar Avin, Tashma, let's learn from here. Hamocher sadeh lo ve'kochavim lokech u'mevi bikurim mipnei tikkun ha'olam. If you sell a field to a non-Jew, you still have to bring the bikurim because of tikkun olam, right? That's our Mishnah. So now, what do they say here? Mipnei tikkun ha'olam in, but mida oraita lo. Ah, now we get to our Mishnah. How does our Mishnah work with this machloket amoraim? Right? What did we say? According to the Mishnah. Okay, we should have asked this question way back. According to the Mishnah, what does it seem to say? You only bring bikurim because of tikkun olam, which makes it sound like midoraita, you're not chayiv in bikurim. If you sell your field to a non-Jew, there's no chiyuv bikurim. Right? Everyone follows that? Very clear. So that would prove Rabbi Elazar. So I'm Rav Ashi. No, you misunderstood the takana. Shtei takanotav. There were two takanot. It was a two-pronged. There was a development here. Meikara havu maiti mida oraita, right? Because it can't possibly be that Rabba disagrees with the Mishnah, right? He'd have to explain the Mishnah. So this is how he would explain. In the beginning, they would bring bikurim on a doraita level, but what was the issue? Kevan dechazu dechamikre umazabne desavre b'kedushatayu kaiman tkinu lehu delo leite. So now, what did they say? They said that since you still had to, right, what was the issue that, 1 second, right, what did they see? They saw that if they sold the land to the non-Jew, they still had to bring bikurim. That's what we said, midoraita. If they have to bring bikurim, this is Rabba's explanation. If they had to bring bikurim, what'd they say? Oh, obviously it's not so bad that we sell this property to non-Jews because we could still bring bikurim on it, and clearly, right, there's no real sale. It's okay. So therefore, they were selling land to non-Jews, and they didn't want people to sell land to non-Jews. So therefore, tekinu lehu delo leite. So then they said, well, let's make a takana against the doraita, really, and not allow them to bring bikurim so that they won't sell their land to non-Jews. But then what happened? Kevan dechazu demandalo sagile. They saw that people who really didn't have means, though, had no choice but to sell their land and mizabin, and then they would sell their land anyway, despite the fact that it was mufkia mi bikurim and it didn't look like it was a good thing to do. V'kam ishtakam biyado ve'kochavim. And then the land ended up permanently in the hands of the non-Jews, and we didn't want that to happen. So therefore, hadar tekinu lehu deleitu. So then they made the takana the other way again, that they had to bring bikurim. So that's how they explained the Mishnah according to Rabbah. So now they prove that you can't necessarily use our Mishnah as a proof for Rabbi Elazar, because you can also explain it the other way. Itmar. Now we're going to have a machloket. Okay, this takes us to the end of the daf. We'll go a little further. Machloket emoraim, about if you're mocher sadeh leperot. If you sell your field just for the fruits. So, now, what's the story with Bikurim? Bikurim, the pasuk says, V'samachta b'chol atov asher natan l'cha Hashem Elokecha u'lebeitecha atav ha'levi v'ager asher b'sharecha. Okay, and you're supposed to take mereshit kol pri adama asher tavi me'aretzecha. Okay, that you're supposed to bring from your land. So now, what if you own the land but you don't own the fruits? Or you own the fruits but you don't own the land? So do you have to bring Bikurim, or can you, the real issue is with Bikurim, you bring the Bikurim, and then you say this Mikra Bikurim. And in the Mikra Bikurim, you say, from my land that God gave me. Now, if you don't own the land, you can't say that in good, honest truth. So, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Mevi V'Koreh. You do say it anyway, because you own the payroll, that's enough to say you own the land. Rish Lakish Omer, Mevi V'Eino Koreh. You bring, but you don't say the Mikra Bikurim. Rabbi Yochanan, now we're going to see the explanation. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mevi V'Koreh, because Kinyan Perot ki Kinyan Aguftami. He thinks that buying, owning the Perot is like owning the field itself. Rish Lakish Amar Mevi V'Eino Koreh, because Kinyan Perot lav ki Kinyan Aguftami. Buying Perot is not like acquiring the goof itself. So now we're going to have a few questions. Eiti ve Rabbi Yochanan le Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan asks against Rish Lakish. Ule Beitecha. It says in that pasuk, "Asher natan Hashem Elokecha u'leveitecha." What do we learn from here? Melamed she'adam mevi bikurei ishto bikurei. You can bring beitecha. They often explain as your wife. You can bring your wife bikurim and read bikra bikurim because it's as if it's yours. So now, what do they say? Amarle. So what do you see there? Right, that even if it doesn't belong to you, right, but it belongs to someone else, it's okay. So now he says, "No, amarle shanei hatam dechtivu u'leveitecha." No, there's a special limud by your wife. The pasuk specifically tells you that, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to. Okay? V'ikadam, right? Some people say that the question was exactly the reverse. Eiti v'Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish l'Rabbi Yochanan. The question was asked the flip. Rabbi Lakish used this source to ask against Rabbi Yochanan. And he said, u'lebeitecha melamed she'adam mevi bikurei ishto v'koreh. There you see that what? You can bring, right? Rabbi Yochanan says, mevi v'koreh. And he says, look, there's a special limud just for your wife. Hatamu dechtivu lebeitecha, aval ba'al malo. So Amarle, what does he answer him, right? Makes it sound like only for your wife, but for anybody else you can't. So Amarle, tama didi nami mehacha kamina. No, that's exactly where I prove it from. Because it says you can read for your wife, that means you can also read for other people who aren't you yourself. It's not being dishonest. Okay, last source, Etive, another question. Hayababa derechu bikurei ishto biyado. V'shama shemeta ishto, mevi v'koreh. He was on the derech, and he's bringing his wife's bikurim, and he hears that his wife died. So he's allowed to still bring the bikurim. So what does it sound like? Meta in, lo meta lo. Only if she died, but if she didn't die, he couldn't have been koreh. So this sounds like you can't read, right? You can't do mikra bikurim for someone else's stuff. Right, if you only own the payroll. Now, why is this? What's the issue with the wife? I didn't get into this. We're rushing. It's the end. But with a wife, we're talking about her nichsei malug, where you don't own the goof of her property. She does, and you only own. You only get the payroll. So now they say no. Hu adin to alva gav de lo meta. Don't infer that if she didn't die, you couldn't. No, even if she died, you'd be allowed to. Umeta itzri chale. But why did they have to give the case umeta? This is interesting. You might have thought that there would be a unique halacha that if your wife died while you were in the middle of bringing her bikurim, then you wouldn't be allowed to read. Why? If you cut your produce and then you give it to a shaliach, and then the shaliach dies. Mevi ve'eino koreh. You bring, but you don't read mikra bikurim. Why? Shenemar ve'lakachta ve'eveta. I told you we get back to this. It says you have to bring, right? You have to take it and bring it. Ad jitei lekicha v'hava'a be'echad. The same person has to do the taking and the bringing. So if you have to replace your shaliach on the way. He did part, but then he didn't do the other part. Then you won't be able to read anymore because you can't say in good honest, right? You can't say in good honesty, lakachti veheveti, because you did it. So therefore, you might have thought with a wife the same thing. Kamash malan, that's not the situation because a wife is different. We have often said ishto kigufo, and just because she dies in the middle doesn't mean it's not the same lekicha v'hava. Okay, and then they're going to say that they go to shitatam Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish because they have a very similar machloket in another case. And they're going to say, well, why do you need to say they argue in both cases? Couldn't you have learned one from the other? It's going to be the next part. No, but it could be he'll go home, but then he's... Right, the question is, what's he doing, and is he going to go back home? It could be also, very likely, he didn't even know his wife died. But then the question is, how... Right, then he's going to read anyway because he doesn't even know. But I guess they're talking in theory, what would be the halacha. Also, often they're just really talking theoretically. And when they talk theoretically, they don't often think about the other aspects of the fact that he's going to go back for the funeral and that kind of... right, it was exactly. It's really trying to get to the issue of the ownership, of who owns it.